Good morning, Boker Tov to all on this glorious Tuesday morning. It's a beautiful day. It's beautiful to be alive. It's beautiful to study the Parsha. Parsha's Kisavo, whose theme and essence are all about gratitude, an attitude of gratitude, which we'll get to more in a moment. You all requested the microphone last week, so your request is my demand. And here it is. I hope you can hear clearly. The Parsha class this morning, the entire Parsha series for the year, is sponsored by dear friends Becky and Avi Katz and family in memory of David Grossman, of Becky's father, David Menachem Manush, whose neshama should continue to have an aliyah. Parshas Kisavo, Sefer Dvarim, is fantastic. We introduced all of Sefer Dvarim by talking about the Musar Sefer that it is, and indeed it is just that. It is a great, great Musar Sefer. And in it there are so many messages which are so relevant and contemporary that continue to inspire and drive us each and every day, and they always seem perfect for the Parsha. They always seem exactly so relevant for the Parsha. So Parshas Kisavo can be found in the articles from Chumash, page 1068. And the Parsha begins, V'haya Kisavo el ha'art asher Hashem lokecha nosein lecha nachala v'yishta v'yishavta ba. When you enter the land that Hashem will give you, it is a nachala, it is your inheritance, it is your portion, you possess it, and you dwell in it. And then the Torah goes on to give us the first mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Bikurim, the first fruit that are brought to the Beis HaMikdash. They're given to the Kohen, and there is a ceremony with pomp and circumstance to celebrate their arrival. The Imre Chaim, we're going to start out with the Vizhnitzer. The Heilige Imre Chaim, the great Vizhnitzer, says, Why is it, V'haya, V'haya Kisavo, what do we know about the Medrash of Chazal? Tell us about the word V'haya. The word V'haya always connotates, always denotes simcha, happiness. V'haya Kisavo. So where is the happiness? Where is the joy? V'haya Kisavo. And listen to the Imre Chaim. V'haya osios havaya ve'en v'haya ela simcha. Aide simcha yecholum l'hachnis shem yisbarach gam ala artzios. Kisavo el ha'aretz. When you come to the land, to the mundane, to the physical. And v'haya, what's the greatest simcha? When you transform the physical to spiritual. When you engage the material and you elevate it and you transform it. Food is not food, it's fuel to do good things. And sleep is not laziness, it's rest to be rejuvenated, to change the world. And every material object or possession that we encounter and that we engage, we transform. Kisavo el ha'aretz, artzius. When you get to the earthly, when you get to the material, the physical things, and we transform them, v'haya, then, says the Imre Chaim, there's no greater simcha. Nourishing the soul is delicious. And nourishing the body is delicious. But when you transform the experience of nourishing the body into one of nourishing the soul, that's v'haya. That is the most delicious that there is. And he continues, v'yakis avar la'aretz, v'haya hi simcha. Eretz romez la'anava. V'haya masa yechol yos b'simcha. Kisavo el ha'aretz in ba'im lebechinas anava. The second thing he says, his second suggestion, the Vizhnitzer, is why is v'haya lashon simcha? Kisavo el ha'aretz. When you come to the aretz, the earthly, lowly ground, a place of humility. See, an arrogant person can't find happiness. Because why isn't the world showing me the honor, the respect? Why isn't the world falling hook, line, and sinker into the way I want? Why don't my pulling the strings and the threats that I make to others, making them be act and behave the way I want? The arrogant person can never find contentment or serenity or peace because they think they control the universe. But the universe doesn't agree. But a humble person, kisavo el ha'aretz, if we can bring ourselves to a place of aretz, if we bring ourselves to a place of humility, the recognition we don't control the world, there are other people and other ideas, we make room for others, we make room for Hashem, then v'haya, then we have a tremendous sense of simcha. It's a beautiful insight, I think by the Ben Yehoyada. I included it in my introduction to one of the volumes of Yadrin that says, Hashamayim ima'al v'ha'aretz mitachas. Hashamayim ima'al v'ha'aretz mitachas, a pasuk that we say every day in, anyone here say it every day? In Aleinu, Shemayim Ima'al V'Ha'aretz Mitachas. So what does it mean? The Shemayim Ima'al, the heaven above, V'Ha'aretz, and the earth below. So I think it's the Ben Yehoyada who says, if we have an attitude to HaShemayim Mima'al, when it comes to Shemayim, Dika Inyanim, when it comes to heavenly spiritual aspiration, mima'al. I look at those above me and I say, I wish I could be like them. I yearn and I long to daven like them, to live with that emunah, with that faith. I want to know, I just went to an extraordinary member of our community, made a siyum hashas the other night, a young man. It was a moving, moving event. He was brought to tears by listing the names of the masechtas, the romantic relationship he had with each masechta he completed of shas. It was extraordinary. And I sat there, also moved to tears, thinking, Shamayim mima'al, wow, I want to be like that. I want to reach for that. That's above me, but I could yearn, I could stretch. Maybe I could achieve that. V'ha'aretz mitachas. But when it comes to the material, physical things, then mitachas, I look at those beneath me and I say, no matter how little I have more than someone else. There's someone always who has a little less. I don't know what the person who has the least does, but hopefully that's none of us. But no matter how little someone has and how much they want, there's always someone who has less. So if you want the formula, the prescription for happiness in life, it's to live with the humility. Shamayim ima'al. When it comes to spiritual aspiration and endeavors, I strive, I stretch for more. But ha'aretz, when it comes to the physical mitachas, then I feel that I always have what I need. And this is how the Ben Yehoyada explains the Gemara, through which the Boker Tzon Synagogue, Dr. Yitzchak Belzman Beis Medrash Torah Journal called Yadrim is named. The Gemara says, Harotza lahachkim yatzpin. Harotza lahashir yatzpin. A person who wants to become wealthy should face the north. V'harotza lahachkim yadrim. And a person who wants to become wise should turn towards the south. So Ben Yehoyada takes that explanation and applies it here. And he says, what does it mean? If you want to become rich, then you look to the north. What does it mean you look to the north? If you want to become a rich person, then you look to the north means you say, you know, I have what I need, and therefore I'm already rich. If you want to become wise, you look to the south, and you realize that you need to aspire for more greatness. So that's the Imre Chaim, the vision. It says, V'haya, V'haya is Lashon Simcha. V'haya connotes joy and happiness and contentment. How do you find that? Kisavo el ha'aretz. When you transform the physical mitzvos, Israel is the only place on earth that has mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. You don't bring bikurim in Boca. You don't take trumos and maestros in Boca Raton. Or even in the five towns, or Tinek, or anywhere else. You don't take mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. You only have mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. Think about that expression, that very phrase. A mitzvah, a sacred, holy act, hatluya, that depends on, that relies on, that is found where? Ba'aretz, in the earth, in the soil. Transform that which grew in the ground, becomes the vehicle, the instrument for doing a mitzvah, and that's v'haya. That brings simcha. Or the second pshat is the humility of the v'simcha is, the humility is, el ha'aretz means to our place of humility. That brings the simcha. Why does the pasuk say kisavo? What should it say? Kisavo is the singular, lashon yachid. It should be in the plural. Kisavo'u el ha'aretz. When you, the plural Jewish people, 2 to 3 million traveling through the desert, Moshe's addressing them right before they're going to cross over into the land. He should say, Kisavo'u, when you, in the plural, enter the land. So I saw in a Chassidish Sefer, it says the following. Kisavo, it should be Lashon Rabbim. Vaya Kisavo, Nemer B'Lashon Yachid, V'lo Nemer B'Lashon Rabbim. Kedei L'Lamdenu, Shemitzvah Yishev Ha'aretz Yisrael, Hichova Kedosha U'Mutelas Akol Echad Ve'Echad Mi'Yisrael. Why is it in the singular to tell us kisavo? When you think kisavo'u, oh, it's the plural. When the whole Jewish people will move to Israel, when others go to Israel, when that nefesh b'nefesh flight lands in Israel, so then they'll go, it's important, they should go, somebody should go, yeah, it's important. So the pasuk says, the Torah says, no. Vaya kisavo, you in the singular. The obligation, the responsibility to figure out not if but when we will move to Israel is not on the masses. Because if it is, everyone will dismiss it and think it's somebody else's problem. It's on the individual, kisavo. How are you thinking about it? Where is your struggle with it? Today is one of those days that I'm very jealous and that continues to renew that desire to want to move to Israel because today's election day, again, in Israel. You know, what's that expression? Vote early and vote often? So they get to actually fulfill that in Eretz Israel. Vote often. Anyway, so today's election day in Israel, you may have noticed it because your social media feed is filled up with people putting pictures of them. My siblings put the pictures of them voting on our family WhatsApp group, and I said, it's amazing. The most high-tech country in the world you're still writing on a piece of paper and putting it in a box with a slot. So my brother wrote back, the Russians can't hack our election system. So they probably still can. But anyway, the point is today's election day in Israel, and it's one of those days that we should be jealous. What it means after 2,000 years for Jews to have sovereignty over their own land and to democratically be able to determine their own future. How many of these last 2,000 years did we live in countries where we had no vote, where we had no say, we had no influence, we had no input? And even in this great country in which we do, and it's given us great opportunity and great blessing, but it's still not ours. We are among it, we're part of this country, but it's not the Jewish people, it's not the Jewish state, it's not the Jewish homeland. The fact that a Jew is in a homeland in their Jewish state and has the ability to be the arbiter of their own destiny to vote, it's an extraordinary, extraordinary day. And it shouldn't be lost on us. So that's what this Sefer says, Vayaki Savo in the singular, Naki Savo'u. Not when you in the plural, Nefesh B'Nefesh Plains, I watched the video, I cried, it was nice, and then I go back to my palm trees in South Florida. No, Ki Savo in the singular. When are you going? Are you struggling with it? What's your plan? What's your contribution? What's your difference? When will you merit to become a citizen, to be not just a spectator to the Jewish destiny, but to be a player so that you get to enter the vote, you get to be part of an election process as well. Anyway, that is the beginning of the mitzvah, how the mitzvah of Bikurim is introduced to us. Vaya ki savo el ha'aretz. He has the Vishnitzer had a few other pshatim. He has another one, fine, only because you asked. Vaya ki savo el ha'aretz. He says, aretz romez le'emes. Actually, this is worth repeating because we studied it last week. Do you remember last week we saw the Medrash that talked about the debate? Should man be created? Should man not be created? And there were four opinions, truth and falsehood and chesed. And, do you remember? And God took truth and he threw it to the ground. And we said, we quoted the Kotzker Rebbe, that any truth which tells you to be divided is not a real truth. So God didn't throw truth to the ground. He threw counterfeit truth to the ground. So based on that, Eretz Titzmach, emes me eretz titzmach, that truth comes from the ground. Vaya, when are you besimcha? Ki savo el ha'aretz. If you come to a place of emes, if you live your life with emes, with truthfulness, if you are lie and hypocritical and duplicitous and you cut corners and you twist the truth and you exaggerate, you won't find happiness. It's very hard to keep up your lies. You have to remember exactly how you lied. It's exhausting. So it's very hard. You can't find happiness. You want to find happiness? Always stick to the truth. You can't go wrong. So, emes me eretz titzmach, vahaya ki savo el ha'aretz, the vahaya, says the Imre Chaim, the joy, the happiness, the vahaya comes, el ha'aretz. When you go to the place of emes, when you live in a place of truth. Okay, fine, we'll tell you one more. We could do the whole shiur just on the Vishnitzer, on the opening pasuk. Vahaya ki savo el ha'aretz, Hashem Hashem lekecha nosein. He says, he quotes the Sefer Avas Yisrael, that ha'aretz, Becheshbon, Tzadi Pshuta is Gematria Shabbos Kodesh. And Vahay is Lashon Simcha. Vahay Kisavo al Haaretz, Kishazochen Lavo al Shabbos Kodesh, Tzarech Lios Besimcha. La'ango Bezmiro Shiros Vetishbachos Lashmo Yisborach. Kisavo al Haaretz, Haaretz is Gematria Shabbos Kodesh. So how do you have to come into Shabbos? With a sense of Vahaya. You can't come to the Shabbos table Fabisana, negative, nervous, angry, depressed, frustrated, down. You have to enter Shabbos with a sense of simcha, vahaya, kisavo al haaretz. Kisavo, when you come into Shabbos Kodesh, it has to be with an attitude of vahaya, a joy, a simcha, a happiness. Shlach Kodesh, remember we studied earlier, says, lo sevaru eish b'chomosh v'seichem, you can't have fire burning in your place b'yom HaShabbos. The Shlach Kodesh says, what's v'lo sevaru eish? What does it mean you can't ignite a fire on Shabbos? You can't get angry. Fire is anger. You can't get it. Shouldn't be angry the other 6 days of the week either. But particularly on Shabbos and particularly at candlelighting. Get in the bath. You didn't set the table. I told you to take your book bag and put it away. Why aren't you home yet from running your drasha? All the anger that potentially could come out in other people's homes on Erev Shabbos. Lo sevaru eish. We have to go into Shabbos, particularly candlelighting time. When we go El Haaretz to a place of simcha, it has to be with an attitude of vihaya. Okay, we'll leave it there. Though there's a lot more. There's a lot more Imre Chaim, a lot more Vishnitzer. Okay, so the Torah tells us we have this mitzvah of Bikurim, the mitzvah of the first fruit, Reishis Kopri HaAdama, the first. This is a very sacred mitzvah. Rashi tells us, because the fruit is not the only thing that's called Reishis. Klai Yisrael, the Jewish people, are called Reishis. And the Torah is called Rishis. And when we fulfill this mitzvah, it is of the highest level and the highest order. It is an incredible mitzvah. And when the farmer brings his first fruit, his first fig, we've discussed this at length in the past. You can listen online. We're not going to review everything we've said previously. But the distinction between Trumos and Maestros, which proportionally, percentage-wise, are a lot more. It takes a lot more generosity and discipline for the farmer to give Trumos and Maestros than Bikurim. Bikurim is just the first little tiny little figula, the first tiny little grape, the first tiny little fruit. It's nothing, it's a gornisht. And yet, pomp and circumstance and ceremony and music, and it's unbelievable what goes on when he brings that tiny little nothing. So, we've explained in the past, I heard this from Rabbi J.J. Schachter, the difference is, Truma and Maestro is taken when? At the end of your harvest. So you know what you get to keep. So then, even though you're giving away a lot more, it's less impressive, because you know what you have. Bikurim is your first fruit. You don't know if anything else is going to come. This could be it. All your hard work, all your backbreaking labor, this could be all that you reap. And yet, you're prepared to give it to Hashem. When you're prepared to give your first to Hashem, when you don't know yet what, else is to come, that's extraordinary. And that is deserving of pomp and circumstance, of ceremony, and of celebration. So the farmer brings it, gives it to the Kohen, waves it, and has a announcement. V'anisa v'amarta. And he pronounces. He answers, V'anisa b'kol rami. He has to say it out loud. And he pronounces, Arami ovid avi v'yered mitzrayim. You may recognize this section. Where do you see it? When do we say it? Pesach. Now it's Erev Rosh Hashanah, so we're not going to speak about Pesach. But Erev Pesach, we did speak about exactly this. Why are we invoking this at the Seder table? Arami dovid avi. Bikesh, lavan, bikesh, they wanted to lock or sakol. Wanted to uproot everything. And what's the evidence? Arami ovid avi. Where do we have evidence that lavan wanted to destroy the Jewish people? We discussed this at length Pesach time. Why is this the centerpiece? And it's in the Chazal, we spend the Seder night doing biblical exegesis on this section, dissecting it, analyzing, understanding it, invoking the rabbinic tradition of it. So we'll leave all that for Pesach. So back to Parshas Kisavo. So the farmer waves it and he says this all in pronouncement, Arami Ovid Avi, Vayered Mitzrayma, and so on and so forth. Why is he saying this here? You're bringing your first fruit to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, you're devoting it and dedicating it to God, and you're saying, here's Jewish history until this point. Why are you saying Jewish history until this point? So Rabbi Soloveitchik has a fantastic insight. And Rabbi Soloveitchik says that what you're doing, the reason we're invoking this text specifically and telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, when we offer Bikurim and then again on Pesach. The Haggadah and Mikra Bikurim constitute two separate independent mitzvahs. Their common root is to be found in the norms of Hakaras HaTov, expressing gratitude. The manner in which gratitude is expressed differs. Mikra Bikurim is Shevach, praise. The Haggadah is Shira, song. In Mikra Bikurim, the precept of gratitude is fulfilled indirectly by telling the story. There are no special words of glorification, no explicit words of praise. The narrative description of what happened suffices. All addenda are superfluous. The duty of Hakaras HaTov is discharged by describing the events, similar to the reading of the Megillah on Purim. When explaining why we do not recite the Hallel on Purim, Talmud says, Kriyasa Zuhilula. Reading the story of Esther is itself the highest praise. In other words, the thanksgiving is implicit in the narration itself. All one is required to do is tell the truth. Aramid Oviravi is not filled with superlatives. It's not filled with praising God, acknowledging God, finding God. It's just, here's the story. Because when the story is so extraordinary, then the miracle and the gratitude just tell themselves. Too many of us live life on the fast track of going forward. And the past becomes forgotten. And the past becomes neglected. And sometimes we just tell the story of the past, it becomes obvious how much gratitude we have to have for it. This is one of the themes we've seen through Sefer Dvarim, we talked about a few weeks ago, when Moshe reminds them, hey, clowns, 40 years you've been going through the desert. Have you noticed that your shoes haven't worn out? Have you noticed your kids are growing bigger and you haven't had to buy them different clothing? It hasn't worn out? Have you noticed any of this? Are you grateful? Do you tell God? Do you express your gratitude to Him? An enormous theme of Sefer Dvarim is gratitude and the direct, not indirect, the direct relationship between gratitude and happiness. Also both expressed very directly in a very focused way here in Parshas Kisavo. The Bikurim is all about gratitude. Hashem, thank you for this little fig. So when I say thank you for the little fig, why am I telling the story of Aramid Ovid Avi, says the Rav? Because how did I get to this little fig? How did I get to this little fig? Well, I planted a tree, but where did I plant that tree? I planted it here in Israel. How did I get to Israel? Because I was taken out of Egypt and I survived a 40-year travel in the desert and I merited to come to the land that you promised me. How did I survive Egypt? Well, there was a splitting of the sea and there were 10 plagues and there was, how did I get here? How did I get here? So, you know, there are milestones that we reach. And when we reach those milestones, we need to tell the story to our children and grandchildren, not only of the milestone, our 70th birthday, our 80th birthday, our 100th birthday, our 50th anniversary, our retirement party, our whatever it is, our Siyum HaShas, we completed learning Shas, and you could be 35 years old and you finish learning Shas. It's not a function of age. But we take those moments to say, not just this moment I'm proud of, but what was everything that had to happen to get me to this moment? Who came before me? What were the sacrifices they made? How did my life fall into order? And just by telling, bless you, that story, sharing that narrative of how I got here. How did I end up here? Who came before me? What sacrifices did they make? What decisions did I make? What decisions were made for me and about me that ended up leading me to here and now? Just by telling that story is the expression of gratitude. It elicits, it invokes that attitude of gratitude. That attitude of gratitude, and it tells that story. I've shared on several occasions now, because I've been very focused on this, and this emphasis of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, based on these psukim, encouraged us to keep a Hashgacha Pratis journal, a gratitude journal, every day to try to find Hashem in your day, to see Hashem in that day. You'll excuse me, I'm repeating this. I've said this many times over the last few weeks. I'm too bad. It's worth repeating. So Rav Yaakov and Rav Moshe said, now Rav Yaakov and Rav Moshe were like learning at the highest level, paskening at the highest level. They had time for a cute third grade gratitude journal. They were writing Hashgacha Pratis notes about how everything worked out. Turns out I got the parking spot and thing. Yeah, that's Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov encouraged us to. And Hakar Satov and Hashgacha Pratis is not just when things are good, even when they're bad. Even when they're bad. So you know what? I was delayed. I couldn't get to the airport. It turns out I missed the flight and I wasn't able to go to the Simcha. And Hashem, that too is your Hashgacha. I don't understand it. And it's painful for me, but I recognize that that too is from you. In that journal go the good and the bad. So we started our family, a WhatsApp group, my immediate nuclear family, a Hashgacha Pratis WhatsApp group for the every member of the family to be able to put in what happened to them that was great. So my six-year-old son the other day recorded a voice memo that he put in our Hashgacha Pratis journal. Why? He got dressed to go to school in the morning, 6 years old. And then he realized he had to go to the bathroom before he went to school. And he came back and he ran out and told his mother, I want to put something in the WhatsApp. What happened? He went to go to the bathroom and he realized he had never closed his zipper when he was getting dressed. So isn't it amazing from Hashem? He didn't have to undo the zipper now to go to the bathroom because he had never closed it. Now, that's a six-year-old Hashgacha Pratis story. What he didn't realize was the Hashgacha Pratis is he had to go to the bathroom, so he didn't end up going to school with his fly open. That was the real Hashgacha Pratis. But when you're six, you don't appreciate the real Hashgacha Pratis. You only get it at the lower level. But whatever level, whether you have a six-year-old or a 60-year-old appreciation of Hashem's role in our life, that's exactly what we're meant to do, is tell the story. So the farmer, it seems totally bizarre. He's bringing his first fig to Yerushalayim, gives it to the Kohen, the Kohen's waving it, and instead of just saying, thanks for the fig, let me go home now, I got a farm to tend to, he says, thanks for the fig, and let me tell a story. I had ancestors, and there was someone who wanted to kill them, and they survived, and then we went down to Mitzrayim, and then, what are you telling this whole story for your little fig? You know, it's like you're at the checkout line of the supermarket, and you're about to pay for your apple, and say, I want to tell you a story. My parents were in the Holocaust, they wanted to kill us, and that brought me here, so here's $1.50 for the apple. Who's interested in your story? Take the apple and go home. That's a nice story. What are you doing? And the answer is every moment is precious. Every moment of accomplishment, every moment of achievement, every moment which is an answer to our prayers, to have a fig for the farm to produce, is not just gratitude for the moment, it's gratitude for the whole experience. Gratitude for the whole experience. So I say when you make a shahakal over a cup of coffee, you're not just saying, shahakol nebiyav niyabit varo, thank you for the cup of coffee. You're saying is, thank you for the fact that Hashem, you invented a coffee bean. Thank you that there's a farmer who planted it in the ground. Thank you there's someone who broke their back and they harvested it. Thank you there's somebody who ground it into coffee. Thank you to somebody who packaged it. Thank you for the truck driver who drove it. Thank you to the supermarket that had it on the shelves. Thank you that I had the capacity to buy it. Thank you that I brought it home and I had hot water and I was able to make it. Thank you, I'm able to digest. The shahako is not just on the cup of coffee. Thank you, I'll be awake now for the next 20 minutes. It's the thank you on everything that went into getting it ready. And that's all derived here from why we're telling the story of Arami Oved Avi. This Rav insight that telling the story is the narrative. It is telling exactly the experience. Okay. What do they want to do? In this context, we're telling the story of what happened, and what did they try to do to us? This is very important. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. This is some good stuff, so listen up now. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. What does that mean? Somebody translate for me. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. Where are we? We're on Pasuk Vav. Parakha Vav, Pasuk Vav, page 1068. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim vayaanunu vayetnu aleinu avodah kasha. The Egyptians mistreated us, they afflicted us, and they placed hard work on us. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. Art scrolls translating it as, the Egyptians mistreated us. How else might you translate vayareu? Does it mean mistreated? Is that the right form of the verb? So Rabbi Soloveitchik, and the Rabbi Soloveitchik Chumash, points out, the phrase is generally translated as, the Egyptians did evil to us. The Egyptians mistreated us. But the grammatical form is imperfect. If that were the meaning, the more accurate formulation would have been, Vayarei, I can't read. I forgot my glasses. We have Vayareu, it would have been Vayareu. The verse states that the Egyptians not only committed evil themselves, but rather they made us out to be evil. What does it really translate to, Vayareu osanu hamitzrim? They demonized us. They accused us Jews of being disloyal fifth columnists, of plotting a rebellion. Paro suspected Jews would rebel and leave the land. So Vayareu osanu, they mistreated us. And what's the greatest mistreatment of us? Is when they accuse us of having a dual loyalty. When they accuse us and challenge us of having a dual loyalty, when they are suspicious and suspect of us, Vayareu, they made us sound like we're ra. They portrayed us as corrupt. They portrayed us as disloyal. They portrayed us as having a dual loyalty. Vayareu, they demonized us. That's the greatest anti-Semitic act. So not only did they harm us, did they afflict us, not only were they harmful to us, Vayareu doesn't mean, that's what the Rav is correcting, the mistranslation. Vayareu doesn't mean that they mistreated us. Vayareu means they demonized us. They demonized us. Beautiful, powerful insight from Rabbi Soloveitchik. But I saw another insight, also in that same Chassidisha, he quotes from Rav Yaakov Yechiel of Koznitz, who says the word Vayareu comes from the word Reus. Reus. The seventh bracha, the Sheva brachas. We end the seventh bracha. Our hope and our wish for the Chasam Mikala is Ava V'Achva V'Shalom V'Reus. What does the word Reus mean? Friendship. A Rea is a friend. A friend, a good friend. A good friend is a Rea. So what do you mean Reus? So this is the other method. The anti-Semites go after us either by demonizing us and putting us out, excluding us as the fifth column, or by welcoming us, and then we assimilate and we disappear. Vayareu osanu has both connotations. So the Rav's insight, Vayareu, is they demonized us, and the Koznitzer's insight is the opposite. Vayareu means milashon rea. They said, come, come to our universities, come to our schools, join our golf clubs, eat at our restaurants, integrate into our society, assimilate into our country, and you will disappear faster than if we try to destroy you. So anti-Semites, not to suggest that everybody who invites us is doing so with such a nefarious anti-Semitic perspective, but the result is the same. That result of the mistreating us and harming us, the result of anti-Semitism, of Vayareu, is true both on the Rav's Vayareu of they demonized us, they accused us of a dual loyalty, and the Koznitzer's Vayareu of Rea, they portrayed us as a friend and invited us to assimilate among them. To assimilate among them. Okay, continuing. It says, Vayar esanyenu. Vayar esanyenu. What does that mean, Vayar esanyenu? Hashem, you saw our anyenu. Pasuk Zion, we cried out to you. We called out to you. And you saw anyenu v'samalenu v'eslachatzenu. You heard our voice and you saw our affliction, our travails, and our oppression. So the Rav points out there are certain travails and events in a person's life that cause him to scream and cry out to God for relief. And there are other calamities that a person suffers in silence. In the Haggadah, we invoke Vayar Es Anyenu, which refers to what? Vayar Es Anyenu? Zuprishus. This means that husbands and wives separated during Egyptian servitude. There was no intimacy, emotional, physical. The normal romance, intimacy of marriage was not available. Israel's travails included the most private of domains, yet God, who sees everything, is cognizant of even these afflictions. God hears the cries and suffering contained within a person's heart and provides salvation for all his troubles. Vayaras anyenu means, so vanitzak, we called out. When do you call out? When I'm in a public pain, I call out publicly. Vayaras anyenu means, God, you saw even the private pain. Even the private pain. That's what Chazal were saying. This means the separation of husband and wife, which also was difficult and painful, and yet is not a public event. But God, you see even the private pain. And here the Rav explains, and I'm sure we'll repeat it when we get up to Siddur snippets, Amida in 25 years. So it says, when we say in our Amida, Re'eva Anyenu, one of the brachas of Shemona Esrei, thank you, Penny, one of the brachas of Shemona Esrei, Re'eva Anyenu, see our affliction, what are we saying? Are we davening? What are we davening for? I don't want to embarrass anyone. Some of you have been saying Re'eva Anyenu for more than a few years. So what are you thinking about? What do the words mean, Re'eva Anyenu? There's something called Shemona Esrei. We say it three times a day. Atakadosh, Atachonein, Slachlano, Hashivenu, Avin, Re'eva Anyenu, Varivarivenu. You know that bracha? We ended Gaal Yisrael. Familiar with that one? So what are you thinking about? Gaal Yisrael, you redeem us. What are you thinking about? So the Rav says, if you extrapolate from our parsha, Vayar Es Anyenu means the private suffering. Not the things everyone sees and knows about. We cry out to you publicly. But the private pain that we endure, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. But even you, God, you see even that. Vayar Es Anyenu. You see even the private things we're going. That's Re'eva Anyenu, when we daven. And said the Rav, we're not davening in that bracha for redemption. How do I know that? We're not davening to future messianic redemption. How do I know that? That's covered later in Bonei Yerushalayim and Matzmiach Keren Yeshua, as Tzemach David. Re'ev Anyenu doesn't mean, God, you see the suffering of the Jewish people and bring us to a point of redemption. And no. That national redemption stuff, that's later. As Tzemach of Yerushalayim, we'll get to that later. Re'ev Anyenu means, hey God, it's me, little old me. You know the stuff I go through that nobody knows? The private pain, the private struggles. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. You know. Re'eva Anyenu. You see it. And when it comes to those things, Goel Yisrael. The Yisrael there is not the collective national Jewish people. It's me. I'm your Yisrael. Goel, be my redeemer. Not the messianic redemption. That's later in the Amida. Be my redeemer in the private discomfort, tension, pain, anxiety that I go through. That I go through. So where does that come from that we have this bracha and we insert it here? Vayar Es Anyenu. From the section of the Arame Oved Avi that we invoke. Okay. Ay, gefalt, we've barely started the parsha, and it's already so late. And there's so much to say. After the Mikra Bikurim comes what we call Chazal, the Mishnah and Sota refers to as Vidui Meiser. The farmer now comes in the Beis HaMikdash and offers a confession. The most bizarre confession that the Jewish people have. What is that bizarre confession? The most bizarre confession that we have. Let's look at it inside. Page 1070. He gets up and he says, Biarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis. I got rid of everything that I was not supposed to maintain in my home. V'gam Nesativ LaLevi V'lagir V'layasom V'la'amana. And I gave out. I distributed the allocations exactly as I was asked. K'chol Mitzvascha Shertzi V'sani. I did everything exactly the way you told me to. Lo Avarti M'mitzvosecha. I left out nothing. I neglected, I ignored, I forgot nothing. I didn't eat it when I was in Onin. I didn't contaminate it. I listened to you. I did everything the way that you asked. So imagine I come home, Yechevet's in a bad mood, and I say to her, you know, I have a confession to make. I have a confession to make. And she feels, finally, he's going to be honest. He's going to ask for forgiveness. He's going to admit that he's wrong. He haven't heard that in 22 years. Finally, he says he has a confession to make. I say, I have a confession to make. She says, no. I say, my confession is, I'm perfect. I have a confession to make. I've done nothing wrong. He asked me to take out the garbage. I took out the garbage. He asked me to do homework. He asked me to study for the test. I studied for the Chumash test. He asked me to send the kids the email in camp. I said, Lo shechachti. I didn't leave anything out. I did it all. I did it all perfectly. I must confess, I'm perfect. That's exactly what we just read. The Chazal refer to this as vidui meiser, the confession regarding meiser. And yet, what is it that the farmer said? I must confess, I'm perfect. We've spoken about this in the past at length. There are many perspectives on it. We've quoted the perspective of the Sfarno, of the Rambam. We learn all about vidui from here. It's worthwhile going online and listening, because this Saturday night we're going to start saying Slichos, which includes, as the central part of it, vidui, confession. So if we want that confession to be meaningful for the long period of time we're going to say it afterward, not as long as our Sephardi brothers, but the long period of time, I feel guilty using the word long, but in the next room, I think they're still saying Slichos from this morning. So if we want to understand what that vidui is all about, this is the text. Why is it called vidui meiser? This is the place to look. But I'll just tell you one quick insight of why we call it vidui. Why we call it vidui. And this is also from Bisaladechik. It's fantastic. He says, you know why it's a confession? We're not saying I'm perfect about everything. What is the farmer saying? When it comes to trumas and maestros, I've been perfect. I got it all right. I did it to the T, exactly the way you asked me. So Bisaladechik says, you know why it's called a confession? Because you are making an admission when you say I did this perfectly. You know what you're admitting? I could do other things better. I could do it all perfectly. I can get it all right. If a child comes home who's struggling in school, and because you took away their technology, you threatened them, you grounded them, they really applied themselves, they studied for a test, they come home and they got a 95. They say, I have a confession to make. I got a 95. And why is that 95 a confession? Because it's a confession. I could get a 95 all the time. So the reason this is called the confession is when we admit we did something right, what we're saying, we're obligating ourselves. And what we're saying is, you know, I could get it right more often. I could get it more right more often. And there's an element of a confession in that. I must confess, I was able to do what you asked. And that reveals about me that I have greater potential. That shows, I must confess, that I am capable of more. That's why it's called a confession. And in that context, once he recites that and says all of this, what comes next? A great song by Kol Achai, is that the name? Hashkifa mimon kachecha min ha-shamayim uvarech ha-savcha Yisrael ve'es adama shenasat alonu kashen nishpat lavzen eretz chalach lalav dvash. Pasuk tezvav. So he offers the vidui meiser, and then he says to God, now that I've told you that I got it all right and I did these mitzvos, once we're here in this conversation, let me ask you, let me offer a tefillah, a prayer. Hashkifa mimon kachecha. The word hashkifa is the word hashkafa. It's a terrible word, hashkafa. What does hashkafa mean? What's your hashkafa? That's not my hashkafa. I can't set her up with him because they don't have the same hashkafa. That's not the school for me. I can't contribute to your organization because it's not my hashkafa. That word hashkafa has created more division, divisiveness, hatred in the Jewish people. It's destroyed more shiduchim and it's hurt more stuck allocations. That's why I don't like the word hashkafa. I don't think anybody should. We should just have one hashkafa. I love Hashem, and I love His children, and I love Torah, and that's my Hashkafa. And there's nuanced difference between it. I'm not going to go on this rant right now, though I'm very tempted to. There's nuanced differences, and there are important differences between us, but they shouldn't be what defines us in its sum total. We have so much more in common. Look at this Jewish world, assimilated, disappearing, and I say that not with any sense of triumph, but literally tearing my clothing, Kriya. The Jewish world is disappearing, and the rest of the world is only hating us more than they ever did. And we're going to fight because my nuanced hashkafa is different than yours. That's what we're going to fight about. That's what we're not going to support each other's institutions over. That's going to be what breaks up a shidduch opportunity. Our hashkafa is different. You know what? Everyone got rid of their hashkafa and had one hashkafa of loving Hashem, loving His Torah, and loving the Jewish people. And that was the sum total of our hashkafa. And we saw past the differences, and we only saw what we have in common with love, we'd be a lot better. Okay, back to our text. Hashkifa. So what does the word hashkafa mean? Sorry. What is the word hashkifa? Hashkifa means to look down. Hashkifa, hashkafa is my outlook. What is my worldview? What is my Weltanschauung? What is my hashkafa? What is my hashkafa? Hashkifa. So the word hashkafa is not used to divide, it's used to invoke bracha. And we don't ask each other what hashkafa is. We turn to God and we say, Hashkifa. We care about your Hashkafa, God. Yours is the only Hashkafa that matters. God's Hashkafa is the only Hashkafa that matters. Hashkifa mimon kachecha. Gaze down from your holy place. Ubareches Amchas Yisrael, and give us a big bracha. We need a bracha. Esa Adama Shenasata Lanu. Bless our homeland. Let it produce. Let the fields produce. Let it be safe and secure. Let the election finally have a conclusion. Let people rally with a sense of unity to it. And the question is, why? Why here? Why now? The farmer brought his bikurim. The farmer has said vidoy meiser. And now, all of a sudden, hashkifa mimon katshecha min hashamayim. God, while I have you, and I've just told you how I got the mitzvah right, if you wouldn't mind, then my stocks go up instead of down. I'd really appreciate it. If you don't mind, then everyone's healthy and I can get nachas from my kid and my son can remember to close the zipper in the morning. I'd really appreciate it. Hashkifa min hashamayim. Why now? So I mentioned a few shiurim ago in Parshas Ekev. The summer I learned Halakach v'Halibov with my daughter Atara, Rav Avram Shor's beautiful sefer on Birchas HaMazon. We learned through much of it, and we came across this piece. We were reminding each other yesterday that we learned it earlier this summer. And he asked this question, and he explains a very interesting anomaly with this question. I'm going to ask him, this is the way we do it, Jewish people do it. I'm going to answer that question by first asking another question. And here's that other question. Why did it come up in Parshas Ekev? Because we have the mitzvah of benching Birchas HaMazon. I enjoyed a delicious sandwich. I had some good bread. Hashem, thank you so much. Some bench because they ate bread. And others, like Mr. Sanders, eat bread so that they can bench. Some have a fear of benching, so they do anything they can never to eat bread. And some who have no interest in bread always make sure to eat bread once a day because they can't imagine one day without reciting the benching. It's so beautiful, the benching. What do we have at the end of benching? The formal part of benching is made up of four brachas. And we've talked about who authored each of them, and biblical, and rabbinic, and so on. But four brachas. And after we get to Al Yechasreinu, we're done. At the end of Al Yechasreinu, the formal central part of benching is complete. It's done. But what do we do afterwards? We start reciting a whole list and litany of harachamans. Some of them we gave tunes to and get us through. Some of them have new things. The new RCA sitter has a harachaman for the Israeli soldiers. It has a harachaman for the Medina Israel. We've introduced new harachamans. What are we adding harachaman? I had to bench. I finished benching, and the harachamans have nothing to do with benching. Benching is all about thank you, Hashem, for the land, for the Torah, for my bris, for my people. Thank you for the bread, which, by the way, also reinforces what we said earlier. I just ate bread, and I'm talking about my bris. I'm talking about you gave us the land of Israel. I'm talking about Har Sinai, you gave us the Torah. What does all that have to do with the bread I'm eating? And the answer is, I'm telling the whole story how I got here. I know I just had a sandwich, but let's start at the beginning. Let's start at the beginning. I'm not just thanking you for the sandwich. I'm going to thank you. Let's go to the beginning. And I'm thanking you for everything from the beginning until this sandwich. Until this sandwich. But I'm done. Al Yechasreinu, I'm done with benching. Haracham on this, haracham on Yifarnas Leinu V'chavod, haracham on Yishbor Aleinu, haracham on this, haracham on that. What in the world? What are we tacking it all on here? That's Rav Avram Shor's question. Halakach v'alipov. So he says, he invokes the Chavetz Chaim. And the Chavetz Chaim asks that question in our parsha. Masha adam espalel hashkifa mimon kotshecha ki la'achar kiyam ha-mitzvah huzman mesugal lehispalel. The Chavetz Chaim asked that question, the Chavetz Chaim gave an answer, and he said, you know, the most auspicious, the most opportune, the most welcome time to daven is right after you've done a mitzvah. Right after you complete a mitzvah, and your neshama is on fire, and you have contributed something to your relationship to Hashem, you've shown Him that you're listening, and that you care, and that you're doing, right then is the moment to ask. Ki b'koach kiyam ha-mitzvah hu eis ratzon. When you do a mitzvah, you've created an eis ratzon. And because you've created an eis ratzon, you've made it an auspicious moment, take advantage. Boom! Now, ask. And where do we see that? The Chavetz Chaim said, where do we see? So the Chavetz Chaim said, Uvizeh mevar Hashem Chavetz Chaim inyan amir asaracham an achar kiyam mitzvah d'oraisa shabirchas amazon. Ki ha'idei kiyam ha-mitzvah nasa eis ratzon. When you benched, you fulfilled the biblical mitzvah of saying thank you. You fulfilled the mitzvah of benching, mitzvah d'oraisa. So right after you did a mitzvah, you say, oh, now is an auspicious moment. Let me tack on some harachamans. I have things I need, things I want, things I want to acknowledge. Now is the time. And so Rav Avram Shor suggests, based on this Chavetz Chaim, maybe this is the origin of the custom of many women. When they light candles Friday night, what do? You make a bracha, you light candles, and all of a sudden you break into my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. You start thinking about the people you love. You ask for them. No, what's the matter? What are you doing that now for? Light candles. You got stuff to do. Why are you offering all that tefillah right when you lit candles? Says Rav Mishor, this is the idea of the Chafetz Chaim. Hashkifa mimon kachecha. I just gave you my trumas and maestros, and I told you I got it right. I take advantage of that eis ratzon, of that auspicious moment to say, Hashem, hashkifa mimon kachecha. Uvarich, give a bracha to us. That's why we say the harachmans at the end of benching. That's why a woman or anyone who lights candles thinks about the people they love. That's why when there's a bris milah, we don't just talk frivolously among ourselves. We offer a special tefillah. The cries of the baby ascend and bring with it our tefillahs. There's a mitzvah happening. It's an eis ratzon. When there's a mitzvah and an eis ratzon, that's when you take advantage of that moment and you ask for a bracha. And that's what the Chafetz Chaim says the farmer's doing here. I offer a confession. I got it all right. I did the trumas and maestros. And while I've done the mitzvah, I've created that eis ratzon. Since I created the eis ratzon, I take advantage and I ask you for help. One of the themes, we'll end with this because I got to get to the airport. But one of the themes, I apologize, we barely got through the parsha. I'll tell you good news. I have amazing news. Amazing news. We're going to read Kisavo again next year. The hope and the prayer is we'll all be here in good health to learn it together. But if we didn't get through it all, that's the beauty of parsha. We'll get to read it again next year. So one of the themes I mentioned is gratitude. The Bikurim is gratitude. Telling the story of how we got here is all about gratitude. Gratitude, 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 gratitude. And the other corollary, the other theme that goes with it is simcha, joy. It's joy. The Pasuk says in this context of Vidui Meiser, it says with Bikurim, V'samachta b'chol hatov. Be happy with all that you have. V'samachta b'chol hatov. But I saw V'samachta b'chol hatov is not just saying be happy for all the good you have. Look in your life, and as miserable as your life is, you'll always find some good. No, that's not what Samachta B'chol HaTov is. The Samachta B'chol HaTov means, the Samachta, how are you happy? B'chol HaTov, when you realize it's really all good. You know, there's an expression, it's all good. How are you doing? It's all good. I know you went through something hard. It's all good. It's all good. I'm all good. It's all good. That's B'chol HaTov. Right? So you can say that and not really mean it. We're meant to mean it. The Samachta, how do you find Simcha? When you live an attitude in life of b'chol hatov, that everything is tov, that it's all good. There's an amazing story. The Magid had a chassid come to him and say, you know, it says, k'shem shemavarchal matov kach mavarchal hara. The same way you bless God for the good, you got to realize that everything comes from Hashem, even that which we perceive, it's painful and it's difficult. So the chassid said, I'm going through so many hard times and hardship, and I'm struggling to be able to connect with Hashem and to feel it's from Him. How can I feel komanda avid rachman l'tav avid, that everything... that everything that God does is for the good. So the Maggid said, go to the next town. The next town, there's a holy Jew. His name is Rav Zusha of Annapolis. And I want you to find him. He's had a very tough life. He's experienced loss and hardship and poverty and debt. And he's had a very tough life. I want you to find him. And from him, he's going to tell you. So the chassid travels. He makes his way to the next town. He finds the Rebbe, Rav Zusha. And he says, are you Rav Zusha? He says, yes. He says, I was sent. He says, why were you sent? What's your question? He said, because I'm struggling with how do you say everything from Hashem is good? How do you feel it's all from good? And the Maggid said, I should come see you. And you know what Rav Zusha said to him? I don't know why he sent you to me. I haven't had one bad day in my life. And the chassid understood. It was Rav Zusha's attitude. Rav Zusha didn't have one good day in his life. He had good days in his life. But he had a lot of tough days. But the Samachta, he woke up every morning with an attitude of gratitude for what he had. And he saw the good, and he believed it would get better. And he had faith it was for a reason, that everything God does is for the good. And the Samachta, how do we achieve the Samachta? When? Bechol HaTov. When our attitude is that whatever is happening, as painful as it might be, somehow everything is for the good, then we find the will and the capacity to live an attitude and a life of Bechol HaTov. So we have a Samachta Bechol HaTov on the one hand, and then we have in the Tochacha, which we didn't even touch upon, and we had so much to say, the Tochacha in our Parsha, the harsh rebuke that's offered in our Parsha, what are we held accountable? What brings, what makes this harsh, graphic, violent punishment come upon us, be visited on us? Tachas asher lo avadat Hashem alokecha, besimcha uvetuv lev. Hashem says, because I gave you so much good, and you, fabisana, oisvarf, negative, complaining, low life, all you did is not see the good, you saw the bad. Not what you had, but what was missing. Not what was pleasurable, but what was painful. Tachas asher lo avadat b'simcha v'tuv levav. You lived your life without simcha. You had no simcha. You never smiled and you were never happy and you were never grateful. So you know what? I checked out. Where does the tochacha come from? It's not God doing it to us. It's God removing himself from the picture. And when God removes himself from the picture, Hester Panim, it's a very ugly picture. We've seen what can happen in this world when evil is allowed to rule and reign. We see what can happen when natural disasters don't make a right turn. We see what can happen. So Hashem says, you don't see me, you have nothing to be happy about, you have no gratitude for me, no problem. I'm out of here. I'll go hang out with somebody else who's grateful, who's happy, who I connect with. And we'll see how good your life is when I disappear. When you don't have my divine providence and my divine protection, what are we left with is the tochacha. So the themes of our parasha are gratitude and simcha. The simcha v'samachta b'chol hatov. How do you achieve simcha? When you say it's all good and you mean it. It's all good and you mean it. And tachas ha'shelo avata. And if you don't say it and you don't mean it and you don't feel it, then you're going to have problems. There was a gazillion more things to say about this. But they'll have to wait for next year. Have a great day.